This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Back again. Shady's back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back? 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 Guess who's back?
Second hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Yesterday was the early signing day in college football for the Gamecocks. The big win won't show up in those rankings, but of course getting Spencer Rattler. And if you look at some of these conferences, and we opened the show talking about it, if you look, you know, kind of conference by conference, how about the fact that Stanford had the best recruiting class in the Pac-12? Despite having a lousy year, tough academic school, I mean, beat out Oregon. Now, maybe Mario leaving didn't help there. In the SEC, Texas A&M, the best recruiting class of everybody. And Kentucky, finishing in the top 12 in the country. Ole Miss, only beating out Vanderbilt, and then Florida in last after dealing with that coaching change. In the Big Ten, no surprise, Ohio State number one, but how about Scott Frost in Nebraska last? That's not good for a coach trying to save his job. And Steve Sarkisian, despite the terrible year at Texas, putting together the best recruiting class in the conference and top five in the country. Which takes us to then the ACC, where UNC finished with a top 10 class and Clemson finished number three in the ACC behind UNC and Florida State as well. Joining us now to talk about the job done by Clemson yesterday for early signing day is Joseph Hastings, who is the recruiting reporter for Clemson Sports as part of the On3 Sports Network. You can get to him on Twitter at Joseph A. Hastings, and he's with us now. Joseph, good afternoon. How are you?
Luke, I'm doing excellent today. How about yourself?
Doing well. Appreciate the time. Let's talk about Clemson and some of these players that committed to the program yesterday for early signing day. You know, obviously, when you look at the last couple years for Clemson, I know a smaller class than we've been used to based off of the rankings, not quite as good of a class as the last couple of years, finishing third in the ACC, about 17th. This is all based off of 24/7 Sports. So to begin, just in general, what did you think overall about the 13 commits and the job done by Clemson yesterday for early signing day?
Yeah, so there were no real surprises from what we saw yesterday outside of Jaron Koenig, the talented linebacker out of Hayes, Kansas, deciding not to sign. That was a little bit expected based off what I had been hearing on Tuesday night, which was that, you know, Koenig was still kind of in the process of making that decision, finalizing everything. Obviously, Brent Venables leaving was a huge part of his recruitment, you know, because Venables was not only going to be his defensive coordinator, but was going to be his linebackers coach, position coach, you know, primary recruiter for him throughout this entire process, played a huge role in him committing to Clemson in the first place in late July. So that was the only real big news for the most part for Clemson. Other than that, they signed everybody that they were expecting to sign, signed all 12 of them. Dabo Swinney said that he isn't expecting any more players to sign during the early signing period, so over these next couple of days, because ESP lasts until the end of Friday. So he's not expecting any more additions from a signing perspective. Koenig is still committed to Clemson. I will note that, but you know, Clemson feels really good about their 12 commits. They obviously lost three guys from IMG Academy and Keon Sapp, Daylon Everett, and Jihad Campbell. So the class isn't looking as great as it was a couple of weeks ago. It probably could have finished number one in the ACC, a top 10 class. It definitely would have finished in a top 10 class had they held on to their commitments. But based on all the changes that they've had last minute, I think Clemson is kind of satisfied that it didn't get even worse than it could have been.
I guess you just answered the question, but I'll ask anyways. You know, how big of an impact did the coordinators leaving for other jobs and some of the other staff members? It sounds like, as you said, you know, they probably went from first in the conference to now third. How would you quantify how big of a difference that those changes had on this recruiting class for Clemson?
So Tony Elliott, the offensive coordinator going to Virginia, didn't have any impact on the recruiting trail for 2022, because you never know what's going to happen with 2023, you know, how that may impact them. But 2022, they kept all their offensive guys, none of them decommitted. As for Brent Venables leaving, obviously it was huge. It directly led to Jaron Koenig deciding not to sign with Clemson yesterday. Had Venables stayed, Koenig would be one of 13 signees, at least 13 signees for Clemson. And then looking at the other IMG decommitments, it's really hard to say, Luke, because Keon Sapp obviously was looking to lead this class or potentially lead this class as early back as late November when he took that visit to Michigan, a multi-day visit. And that wasn't even when Venables was in the conversation of being the next head coach at Oklahoma when he started that visit. So, you know, he was already looking to depart from this class. And who knows, if he would have left, then, you know, Jihad, who's also from New Jersey like Keon is, would he have decided to have left as well? And then Dalen Everett, a big part of why all of them committed was going from IMG to Clemson. You know, would he have stayed on board too? So I don't know how much Brent Venables directly factored into them, you know, deciding to decommit, as Keon could have left and Jihad and Dalen followed. But for sure, Venables leaving directly impacted Jaron Koenig and is the reason why he isn't signed to this point.
As we now move forward, Clemson, of course, didn't fill as many spots as they were hoping for at this point, but you still have till February. What should we expect in terms of maybe names or even just, you know, positional needs for Clemson to round out things heading now towards February?
Yeah, so Dabo said that he, you know, they're going to need a linebacker, of course. Koenig is obviously a linebacker. It would definitely help there. They need a running back. The running back we're paying attention to is Trevor Etienne, younger brother of Travis Etienne, obviously one of the greatest players, not only in Clemson history, but in college football history in terms of the production he had. So Trevor set to make his decision on January 8th at the All-American Bowl. Clemson is one of the top three schools in his recruitment, Florida, LSU, the other two. I'm kind of leaning towards Florida right now with him just because of the possibility of playing close to his brother. His mom lives in Jacksonville right now. Travis obviously is there in Jacksonville, would get the family closer together and also give him a chance to make his own path instead of going to Clemson, where, you know, it's going to be some tough shoes to kind of fill there, the ETN shoes at Clemson, based on what his brother did there. And then also switching back over to the defensive side of the ball, Dabo talked about needing a cornerback and a safety. Makes sense because Dalen Everett's a cornerback and Keon Sapp was a safety too, and those two are gone. So, yeah, it's funny how there isn't that much of a need or a desire for defensive linemen in this class. You know, they don't have any signed right now. I think they feel really good about the depth that they have there and the talent as well. But, yeah, those are the primary positions to pay attention to over these next few weeks. You know, they could even go to the portal. I wouldn't rule that out as well, Luke. You know, that's something that Dabo isn't pumping up his fist about and getting excited about, going to the portal. But it may be something he's going to have to do in the coming weeks.
Yeah, how important do you think that could be? We've talked about that a lot here on this show. I think that if you ignore the portal, you're putting yourself at a disadvantage because obviously other teams aren't ignoring it. It's a resource you're not using that others will and are using. So for Clemson, potentially this offseason and moving forward, I mean, how important, how impactful, how helpful could the transfer portal be for this program right now?
Yeah, so I went ahead and on our Clemson Sports podcast, which we have on YouTube and Apple Podcasts as well, I went ahead today and said that it's kind of like the Barry Bonds situation back in the late 1990s. I'm a little young, so I kind of saw this, you know, reading from after the fact. But Barry Bonds was a really good player, but, you know, opted to take something else that could potentially help him keep up with the pace or get ahead of other players who were, you know, taking, you know, steroids and PEDs at that time. So I'm not going to compare going to the transfer portal or using name, image, and likeness to doing just that, but that Dabo Swinney, if he wants to keep up with some of these other programs like Alabama, like Texas, like Texas A&M, you know, Michigan State, you know, schools that have either used the portal or, you know, promoted name, image, and likeness a lot in their recruiting pitches to programs, he's going to have to do that. And or he can stay where he's at right now, which is really good. Like Clemson, even though it isn't what they're accustomed to, it's still a borderline top 10 class, one of the best in the ACC. They feel really good about their development. So, you know, Dabo can continue to recruit at a fairly high level. This isn't like where Florida's at right now. You mentioned University of Florida, where they're at with recruiting. You know, they're still in a good spot, but do they want to take it up to another level? Do they want to add that extra juice? The portal would definitely do that. You know, you can get instant impact players, and they've already reached out to a Virginia offensive lineman whose name I won't even try to pronounce because I don't want to butcher it live, but he was one of the top three finalists for the Remington Trophy, rewarded to the top center in the country. You know, Clemson's reached out to him, so, and there seems to be mutual interest. But we'll see if he decides to use the portal even further.
Talking with Joseph Hastings, the recruiting reporter for Clemson Sports as part of the On3 Sports Network. Get to him on Twitter at Joseph A. Hastings. I imagine Cade Klubnik, of course, is the headliner, the big name in this class.
Yeah.
So let's exclude him because that's the obvious answer. Outside of him, who else should Clemson fans be most excited for or expect maybe the biggest impact from, which I know predicting the future can be hard, but who should Clemson fans be most excited for outside of the quarterback?
Yeah, I'm going to go to a position group here that Clemson fans a little bit concerned about in terms of Andrew Booth Jr. leaving for the NFL draft, but, you know, cornerback and more specifically Jaden Lucas. I just really like Jaden, and his skill set. He's 6'1", 180 or so pounds, you know, physically looks the part of a college player already at this point in time. And he's a very fast player, very athletic, has long arms, has really good recovery speed. He just kind of has everything that you want from a cornerback at the next level. Very disciplined player as well. You're not going to catch him, messing up any assignments or being in the wrong place at the wrong time. I just really like what he brings to the table. I'll also mention Josh Sapp. I don't know if he's necessarily going to have the biggest impact overall when looking back at this class in 4 to 5 years, but I think he can get on the field early. You know, you saw what Will Taylor did last season, and Will was, in terms of his position, he was very, very versatile. He can go take direct snaps at quarterback or go in the slot or be a punt returner. Josh Sapp kind of reminds me of that. You know, he can be in the backfield, take snaps at running back. You know, he can go in the slot, work the middle of the field, and he blocks really well too. So I think that combination could lead to him being probably the sleeper of this class. But other than that, those two are the ones that I would like to highlight.
In regards to Cade Klubnik, coming in as the top quarterback, a lot of excitement around him. Just what's the scouting report? What does Cade do so well? Why is he such a prolific recruit coming out of high school? What can Clemson fans expect from him specifically?
I think Klubnik is just very disciplined. He's very mature for his age. He's never lost a game in high school. He plays at a very good program in Westlake there in Austin, Texas. Once again, he's put his team in a position to win a third straight state title game. He's going to be going to the state title game this Saturday. And just in terms of what he brings to the field, very good fundamentals with his footwork. And that's something that we didn't see from DJ Uyunglele last season on a consistent basis, that footwork. Cade's footwork is really good. His accuracy is on point. He has good touch on the ball, too. And once again, comparing him to DJ, that was just something we didn't see. DJ really tries firing the ball, kind of like a baseball player. You got to put a little bit more touch on it. I think Cade brings that. He's also mobile. Dabo said that he could even be faster than Deshaun Watson. I think next, as against the spring ball, he'll probably clarify those comments if that's confirmed or not. But, he's a really mobile quarterback, has double-digit rushing touchdowns this season. So, yeah, I think he's definitely a different quarterback than DJ is. You know, DJ's 6'5", 250 pounds, looks like a tight end. Cade is about 6'2", sub-200. He's going to have to go through some physical development before he gets onto the football field, but he has everything. He has all the intangibles. People rave about his leadership, how vocal he is. I think Clemson fans are really going to like Klubnik. Probably not next year in terms of being able to see him on the field, but, in years after.
Well, I guess that answered my final question. I was going to ask you who you thought would make more starts at the quarterback position. Do you think this will be some sort of battle, or DJ will be able to hold on for now with Klubnik coming in as a true freshman?
I just think the combination of DJ's experience, having 2 years, and look, not all that experience was positive, as we saw this past season, but maybe he'll be able to learn, from what he did wrong. Maybe Brandon Streeter being the offensive coordinator, changing some things up, kind of making the offense fit around him instead of trying to fit DJ into the Trevor and Deshaun offense, which didn't seem to work with him. Maybe that ends up helping. And also just DJ being physically, way further ahead than Klubnik is. I really do think Klubnik's going to have to go through the strength and conditioning program, put on some more pounds before he's able to take hits at the next level. Because if you watch his tape and if you just watch his games, he doesn't really get hit that much. His offensive line is really, really good, and he's a mobile quarterback. So he doesn't, get put on the ground that much. I want to see him take hits from college players before really making a definitive conclusion. But I'm going to say DJ starts definitively game one as long as he's healthy. Don't know if he starts the final game of the season, though, game 12 of the regular season. Don't know about that, but Yeah, I expect DJ to get more starts when it's all said and done.
Well, always great to have options, of course. He's Joseph Hastings. Get to him on Twitter, Joseph A. Hastings, and read his work. He's a recruiting reporter for Clemson Sports as part of On3 Sports. Joseph, great stuff. Appreciate the insight and the time, and we'll love to catch up with you at some point down the road.
Luke, thank you so much for having me on. I look forward to being back on later on.
Absolutely. Hey, pleasure's all ours. Appreciate it. Joseph Hastings, the recruiting reporter for Clemson Sports with a friend of the show, Matt Connolly, over there. Newer operation. Appreciate the time from him breaking it all down from what Clemson did yesterday. And by the way, those three guys that did decommit and go elsewhere after the Venables news, they ended up signing with three teams that are in the playoff right now, right? So they went to some of the big-time programs. That does change a lot for Clemson. You go from having the third class now, third best class in your conference, 15th overall. If you include those three kids, you're looking at a different class, but that's part of when you go through these changes. And as Joseph said, not quite as bad as Florida. Change head coaches. They finished last in the SEC. But anytime you go through a coaching change, Washington finished last in their conference after firing their coach. Anytime you change coaches, coordinators, or head coach, it can have a big impact and certainly impacted Clemson's recruiting class so far. Speaking of which, when we come back, the Gamecocks were part of a, let's call it a game, I guess, yesterday. The old bait and switch. It's part of the process in all this that I don't like. And we'll get to that when we come back. It's the Morrow Midday Show. Right here on ESPN Radio.
Overhead Door Company, the original garage door company, serving you for over 90 years. Call 843-767-0028 or overheaddoorco.com. Overhead Door Company of Charleston, proud to open hour two of the Morrow Midday Show. You're listening to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Appreciate the time. Last segment from Joseph Hastings, breaking down Clemson's recruiting class with yesterday's early signing day. You know, yesterday I ranted a little bit, I guess. I complained. I maybe sounded like an old man yelling at the clouds, but I feel like an old man today. I went and played pickup basketball last night, and I can't move today. I'm stuck in the chair all afternoon, so I guess this is fitting. But I don't like a lot of the aspects that have come along with this recruiting stuff where yesterday we discussed it because of the kid that flipped to Jackson State and he's, you know, putting hats on and then throwing them off and, oh, I'm not going there, yada, 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 and then unveils the shirt, Jackson State shirt under the sweatshirt. I don't like all these antics and everything. You know, just get up there and say where you're going. In fact, we don't even need to have a press conference. But then, you know, South Carolina got wrapped up in one of these things where one of their commits flipped to Maryland. And Shane Beamer explained that, as he said, here's the quote. He said, can't say it's a surprise that the young man you're referring to flipped, right? They can't talk about them by name if they don't get them signed, which is another crazy thing to me. But Beamer explained that he got a phone call 10 minutes later. Right? The player, Barham, committed on Saturday, and then 10 minutes later called Beamer back and said, just so you know, it's all part of the plan. We're going to flip on Wednesday. What are we doing here? What is this? I don't like this idea. Now, sure, right, I get like, don't feel bad for these coaches and these programs because they do shady stuff and they make plenty of money. But I just, this is not how you do business. And I'm sure I sound like an old man. But what are we doing? He calls and I'm coming to come play for you. That calls back 10 minutes later. Actually, this is all just part of the scheme. I'm going to flip on Wednesday and surprise everybody when I actually pick Maryland and not South Carolina. But nobody's going to know. And they're all going to be so surprised. It's like, what are you doing? Right, using, in this case, South Carolina as a pawn in all this. And it has nothing to do with South Carolina. I'm not a South Carolina fan. If any school was involved like that, I would be saying the same thing. I think it's silly. I think it's a bad way to operate. I don't know if you're getting bad advice from, like, an advisor or your parents think this is a good idea. Like, what are we doing? You know, as the cliches go, you're only as good or as strong as your word. Word is bond. All you have is your word and your name. You know, so on and so forth. All these cliches from over the years. What is this that you commit to a team and then say, actually, this is all just a part of the plan. I'm going to flip on Wednesday. I don't know if this comes from Maryland because a lot of times teams like to sell their fan bases on the fact that they got a kid to flip. Like even the kid that went to Jackson State, I'm sure that wasn't like a last-minute deal. You know, that he woke up yesterday and thought, actually, I'm going to go to Jackson State. I'm sure this was all part of the process. and it's just to create more of a stir and get more of attention, and I just don't like any of this. Not a fan of it. We don't even need to have these different press conferences with the different hats. Send out a fax like Michael Jordan did with two words, you know, when he said, I'm back. Send out a fax, if people still use that, and just say, hey, going to Florida State. Okay, good. Sounds good. We'll see you when you get there. But maybe that's just me. I've never been all that big into recruiting to begin with. Get to the campus. Let's see you actually playing the games. Let's see how good you are. And I especially don't like when the kids get up there on the stage and they're throwing hats away and trashing teams and using them as pawns in their attention game. It's silly to me. It's dumb. It's not how you do business. It's a waste of time. And I would say, you know, these are kids coming out of high school, but the parents should know better. If my kid ever said that, I said, no. You're not going to tell Shane Beamer you're committing just so then you can flip on Wednesday and be more dramatic. Now, you give somebody your word, you stick to it. And I may be guilty of not sticking to my word all the time, but, you know, at least I try. I never intentionally do something like that. I think that's silly. I think it's ridiculous, and I think it's part of all the nonsense with how big recruiting has become that now kids, you know, want even more attention to steal the spotlight even more. By the way, the big news, of course, is Urban Meyer getting fired by Jacksonville overnight. I just read a story. I think it was Sports Illustrated. Put a story out that said, you know, Urban Meyer's antics didn't work in the NFL in 2021, and they wouldn't work in college football anymore either. I don't know. I feel like that's a reach. It was Sports Illustrated. I mean, it wasn't like a decade ago. You know, this isn't bringing back Joe Gibbs and wondering if he can still coach in the NFL. Urban was winning games at Ohio State 3 years ago. Has the game changed that much? I know there's a recruiting, I know there's a transfer portal now and name, image, and likeness, but do we really think Urban wouldn't have success if he went back to Ohio State? Because I don't. The guy could still recruit. I laid out on the show, was that yesterday? Why he is not a good fit in the NFL. Because he can't recruit. And he's not an X's and O's guy. And maybe you can't treat guys the same way in the NFL as you can in college. But I think if Urban got hired by a big-time program tomorrow, yeah, I would expect him to have immediate success. I know we like to pile on people, but I think it's Urban Meyer in the NFL was a ridiculous experiment. Obviously, it didn't work out. It was a disaster. But don't think because he swung and missed in Jacksonville that suddenly he can't coach football, period, or wouldn't work in college football. I don't know if he'll get another opportunity. But it was just 3 years ago he went 10-1. It wasn't a decade ago. It wasn't Art Shell coming back to coach the Raiders 20 years later and wondering, like, does he still have it? It was 3 years ago. I know things change quickly, but I don't think they change that quick that suddenly Urban Meyer doesn't know how to win a football game in college football. I don't know if he'll ever get the opportunity, but if he does, I think he'll be just fine. He'll find a way to adapt and make it work. Saban's still winning games at, you know, age 70 all these years later. I think Urban would be just fine. We'll catch up with Paul Charchi when we come back. Get ready for the NFL weekend and help you set your fantasy football lineups as well. It's the Moore Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Probably playoff time if you're a fantasy football player. I imagine that your league is into the playoffs, making this a big weekend. We got a good Thursday night football game tonight. And, of course, this time of year, all these games become even bigger in the NFL. Games on Saturday this weekend. We're coming down the home stretch. So joining us now to get you ready for potentially your fantasy football playoff matchup, but also just a big weekend in the NFL, is Paul Charchian, who joins us at this time every Thursday. Get to him on Twitter, at Paul Charchian. Check out his free player rankings online at guillotineleagues.com. He's with us now. Paul, good afternoon. How are you?
Well, you know, I can't be expected to perform to my normal standards when I'm deep in the grieving process after Urban Meyer's firing. I mean, what's it say, Luke, about today's NFL when a man of such unusual character, integrity, and humility can't make it through the first season of his five-year, $60 million contract?
Yeah.
It's really a tragedy. And I'm deeply affected, as you can imagine.
I can imagine so. Now, we were talking about this earlier. I would think back to Bobby Petrino, who left under his own accord. He chose to leave the Falcons after 13 games. Are these the two that you can think of as, like, the biggest disasters, where two coaches didn't even make it through the first year? And in this case, it was just one embarrassing story after another for Urb.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Petrino thing's really similar. In a lot of ways, it felt like Urban Meyer quit on the team as well. You'll remember that was the big thing with Petrino was, He up and just left his team. Yeah. And Mike Zimmer, still salty about it a decade later. You know, he, at the time, I believe he said, you can, and that guy can F himself and you can print that. I believe was the exact quote from Mike Zimmer when he walked away from the team. And I got to believe for Urban Meyer and his staff, they're got to be glad to see him go. They get the relatively, well, much comparatively more sane Daryl Bevel as their offensive coordinator. And from just a sheer fantasy standpoint, James Robinson, hopefully back to being somebody we can use again, because it's a great matchup with Houston this week. And the problem has been the last couple of weeks, they didn't run him at all. So hopefully now they will be able to use, we'll be able to use Robinson, you know, at least if nothing else for this week. And I think they get the Jets next week too.
I was going to ask you about that because I know a lot of Robinson owners, I'm sure, have been very frustrated. Urban was kind of throwing his assistants under the bus, talking about he'd get more carries, never did. So we'll see if that corrects itself now with Daryl Bevel having the freedom here moving forward for the Jags. But elsewhere, let's talk about tonight's game as we always start with Thursday Night Football because on paper it's a great matchup. The over-under, I believe, is 52, so you know you expect a lot of points. So from a fantasy perspective, Chiefs-Chargers tonight, I imagine there are some guys in this game that you do like.
I do, but I think the over's too high, and I'll tell you why. We've got, if you just go defenses, if I look at the defenses here, I've got the Chiefs that are very good against the run and the pass. I've got the Chargers that are very good against the pass. They're bad against the run. And so three out of the four ways the points can come here outside of special teams, these teams are pretty good. And but I think people are looking at Justin Herbert coming up back-to-back AFC Offensive Player of the Week. They're looking at Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill, and they're going, well, it just feels like a lot of points, and it's being driven up. The line started at 49. It's moved to 52. I think people are seeing this wrong. The one guy I really like is Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Luke, I just mentioned the Chargers are really bad against the run. Allow me to tell you just how bad. 120 rushing yards per game and 1.2 rushing scores per game. Both are second worst in the league. They've allowed a touchdown to opposing running backs in six straight games, and they've all gone to the opposing starting running back. Another reason I love Clyde Edwards-Helaire. And he had 109 total yards and a touchdown when the teams met earlier this season. So I've got Clyde Edwards-Helaire with his highest rating of any game this year, all the way up at running back number four this week.
Yeah, well, certainly look out for that tonight. And then we get to this weekend. We have the games on Saturday. What I think the most interesting, I'm really looking forward to the Patriots-Colts, but the most interesting storyline, I think, of Saturday is what are we going to get out of Cleveland with this COVID issue?
Oh,
so,
jeez. What a week to be in a short week, right?
Yeah, you're not kidding.
They're missing. They have 14. Last I caught, the count was at 14 players off right now. And I think you basically can't start any Browns with the possible exception of Nick Chubb. And what nobody, I think, has really figured out yet is they got two offensive linemen on COVID. Their other two starting offensive linemen, or two of their other starting offensive linemen, may not play with injury. They may be missing four offensive linemen in this game. So disaster stuff happening here for the Browns. And by the way, two tight ends might be out for this one. Their head coach is going to be out for this one. I think Chubb is the only guy, and he's only startable in the scenario where at least a couple of these offensive linemen end up coming back, Luke. Otherwise, I don't know how you can play any of them right now.
And I know the Rams and I believe Washington football team, other teams dealing with this. When it comes to COVID right now, is this? Do you have like a general rule? Just avoid those teams?
Well, not necessarily. I mean, you got to be smart about every one of these unique situations so that you know who's if it turns out that it's all the players primarily that have COVID are on defense, I'm not worried about my offensive players so much. Mm-hmm. So you got to really pay attention to who these players are that are out and what their scenario is. But very broadly, Luke, you need to drop your middling players to get the backups to your stars because there's just no guarantee that your best players are going to play. An example of that's come down in the last couple hours, Jaylen Waddle had just got contracted COVID, and Devontae Parker is available in a ton of leagues. That's the kind of move you need to be making so that if you've got get the guy who would benefit the most from your stars missing time, you don't need Cortland Sutton on your team anymore. Go drop those middling players. Get backups. And it's unique. It's different for this year. I wouldn't normally say this is the case, but it is right now.
Talking with Paul Charchian on Twitter, @PaulCharchian. Find his free player rankings online at guillotineleagues.com. I imagine for most, right, this is the playoff time in fantasy football. I just have a question for you about the, I guess, ethics of a fantasy league. And it would get complicated if I explain the scenario and get into the weeds. Mm-hmm. Let me try to make it as simple as possible. In one of the leagues I'm in, this happened this past weekend in the final week of our regular season. By the time we got to Monday, one of the players pulled his players Monday night to intentionally lose for seeding purposes. Now, in the process, that affected who got the final playoff spot. I'm just curious to get your thoughts as one of the godfathers of fantasy football. Do you have a problem with somebody throwing the final regular season game of their fantasy league to affect the seeding in the playoffs?
Hell yeah, I do. That's crap. You can't do that. I mean, you know, what you're doing is you, by purposely losing, you're affecting who gets in and out of the playoffs. That is, you know, have some integrity, personal integrity, fantasy football integrity, if there is such a thing. You can't do that because it's not just you that you're affecting. You're affecting the rest of the league. And you don't get to just shuffle the seeding and decide who's in and out of the playoffs. You don't get to do that. You still have to play to win, and that's crap. And I would have stopped that if it were my league.
I'm going to pass that along. I like that because it became a big debating point there this past week.
Oh, I bet it did. Yes, I bet it did. Absolutely. The other one a lot of leagues grapple with here in the playoffs, now that we're in the fantasy playoffs, Luke, is should the teams that are out of it still be allowed to play spoiler in some ways by going and grabbing players off the waiver wire and doing, you know, other machinations like that?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, clearly to me, the answer is no, because you're out of it. And once you're out of it, you should not be monkeying with the integrity of the teams that are still playing to win.
Yeah, no, I agree with you there, certainly. Before we let you go, a couple of other last things. Tom Brady, at least in the regular season, has always struggled against that New Orleans defense for whatever reason. For people with Brady in the playoffs, do you still trust him with this matchup based off of the year he's had or the past matchup against the Saints? Oh. Does this matchup affect things?
Oh, yeah. I trust him here. He's my number one ranked quarterback week. And he destroyed the Saints earlier this season for 375 passing yards and 4 touchdowns. And the Saints allowed the 9th most fantasy points to quarterback, despite the fact that they played Zach Wilson, Geno Smith, Taylor Heineke, Mac Jones, Sam Darnold, and Daniel Jones. That is, they've got like the easiest slate of opposing quarterbacks, and they're still getting hammered. They've got their cornerbacks, Marshawn Lattimore, Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, are deeply overmatched by Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. So, yeah, I love Brady this week, and I have no concerns about starting him whatsoever.
What about Lamar Jackson? Do you think he's even out there? If he is, you know, do we expect he'll be close to 100%? What do you do with Lamar right now?
I have no interest in a Lamar Jackson who can't run. The only reason I'm starting him is for his running. He scored exactly 1 touchdown in 10 games this year.
Wow.
10. That's ridiculous, Luke. I don't want to have 1 touchdown passer on my fantasy team. I can get that with Sam Darnold. I don't need that for Lamar Jackson. So he's way down at quarterback 21 this week. So I don't like him here. And I, you know, unless we have reason to believe that his mobility is restored, I'm not starting Lamar Jackson. And if you want to fast forward to March, without a doubt, the most fascinating storyline heading into the next year's new league year will be whether or not the Ravens decide to pay Lamar Jackson, who's going to want to be one of the 5 highest paid quarterbacks in the league. It's not clear that they should make that financial commitment to him.
No, I agree with you there. I've been saying that throughout this year and past seasons as well. Looking at a couple of running backs or backfields really for the Titans, without Derrick Henry now, which one do you like one more than the others in that Titans backfield right now based off of what we've seen the last couple of weeks?
I love the way you say Titans with a little hyphen in there. I always love that. Donta Foreman has emerged as your lead back for the Titans.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
And the steel curtain is just a moist tissue. They're giving up 115 rushing yards per game on a league-high 5 yards per carry to opposing backs. We've seen basically every starter against the Steelers has run wild, even including like the lukewarm talents of Devonta Freeman. So, yeah, it's not just Dalvin Cook who pounded him last week for 200 yards. It's third-tier running backs like Donta Foreman who is absolutely startable this week.
couple of listeners I know hate the way I say Bengals, so I don't know what they think about how I say Titans.
Well, you say it wrong, but it doesn't mean I hate it. I mean, it makes you uniquely you. I like that.
All right, that's good enough. The other backfield I wanted to ask you about, the 49ers. I don't know if Mitchell's going to be back this week. Is there somebody you like the most in that backfield for San Francisco?
Not unless it's Mitchell, unless we're counting Deebo Samuel as a running back.
True.
And really, Deebo Samuel's turning into a running back, and I don't think that's good for his fantasy overall fantasy value, Luke. And by the way, Mitchell's been great, and if he plays, he's my number five ranked running back. Love him. But let's go back to Deebo Samuel. When Deebo Samuel was at his best, he was the focal point of the entire passing offense, and he was getting tons of receptions, tons of yards, and he was scoring the touchdowns. But now they're not passing to him very much at all. And when his pass with his passing drying up, the receiving drying up, and we're only mostly getting out of what he's getting as a timeshare running back, I'm increasingly worried about Deebo Samuel and what he brings to the table. And I hope they will continue to use him as a receiver. So hopefully that's going to be the case. We'll see. But it's an emerging issue. By the way, a problem shared by Cordarrelle Patterson. Same deal. And I know you guys tracked the Falcons pretty mm-hmm. closely there. Through the first 8 games, when they were using Patterson almost 50-50 as a receiver and a running back, he was giving us 5 catches, 57 yards, and half a touchdown per game. Those are great receiving numbers. Those are like wide receiver one numbers. But over the last 4 games, Cordarrelle's been mostly a running back, and he's getting just 2 catches for 15 yards and no touchdowns. And that's his fantasy values has dried up a ton because of that usage.
Before we let you go, talking with Paul Charchian on Twitter, at Paul Charchian, free player rankings, guillotineleagues.com. You may have already mentioned a couple, but sleepers for this weekend for those needing something to stay alive in the playoffs.
Monday night, you want to take advantage of my terrible Vikings defense. And granted, I am an emotionally damaged Vikings fan, so take this all with a grain of salt. But Justin Fields, available in 80% of leagues, and his rushing has been great. Over the last 3 full games, he's averaged 74 rushing yards. So you're getting starting running back numbers just out of Justin Fields rushing. And then his passing, he gets to go up against a Vikings secondary that's getting destroyed by everybody. No Vikings cornerback ranks higher than 128th in coverage by Pro Football Focus. Allen Robinson finally healthy. Darnell Mooney can beat this team deep. So I love Fields, and go check out Allen Robinson. Find out if he's available, because he's available in a lot of leagues, about half of leagues. Finally healthy, Minnesota dead last in yards and fantasy points allowed to wide receivers.
Yeah, so something to look forward to for Monday Night Football. He's Paul Charchian on Twitter, at Paul Charchian. Free player rankings online at guillotineleagues.com to help you make those tough decisions for your playoff matchup this weekend. Charch, appreciate it as always, and we'll catch up with you moving forward.
Yeah, not next week because of the holiday, unfortunately. But week after that is championship week, Luke, and we will talk then.
Perfect. Sounds good. Looking forward to it. Appreciate it. Paul Charchian, one of the best in the fantasy football world. Get to him on Twitter, at Paul Charchian. And, again, online, guillotineleagues.com. He always has his free player rankings on there. So if you have any questions as you sit down and try to set your lineup, head on over to guillotineleagues.com, and you can get the answer from Charch without actually having to ask him directly. Trent, how do you say the football team, the NFL team that plays in Cincinnati?
The Bengals?
Sounds like you say it the same way. I don't know.
I don't think you say it wrong. I don't know. Titans is pretty funny. I mean, I don't know.
I didn't notice.
I listen to you, you know, every day in these headphones, and yeah. I didn't realize you said that.
I never realized until they pointed that out, and I said, oh, you know what? I do kind of say it like that, I guess.
I know people say bungles, you know.
Yeah,
you know, that's,
of course.
That's not like a Pittsburgh thing, but besides that, no, I think you say it fine. Bengals.
But, all right, so what about the team from Tennessee? What do you call them?
No, the Titans.
Titans. What's the difference?
I don't know what's going. Like, I don't know.
The Titans. I say it just like anybody else. And one of my best buddies is a Titans fan from Connecticut. So I talk, as I've always said, at least off the air. Right around here, we don't have to talk so much Titans football. But I talk more about them than any other team outside of the Vikings when I'm not on the air. I don't know. I guess I've been doing it wrong all these years saying
Titans.
That name.
Titans. The Titans.
The Titans?
Say it one more time.
The Tennessee Titans? The Titans.
I'm not seeing anything wrong. I think Paul was just, you know, like emphasizing that.
I may have said it weird in that conversation. Maybe I said it differently. I don't know.
Maybe when you get excited. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. My voice goes up a little bit in pitch. I emphasize the wrong syllable. I don't know. But there are certain words like, you know, we've had listeners, a couple of listeners say they don't like how we say Bengals. There are certain words, that's what Charge said, you know, like you say them wrong, but that's what makes you unique. There are certain words that people just, you know you're saying it wrong, but you say it wrong. In fact, like asterisk is another one that I know that's not how you say it, but it's just easier to say it that way, and most people say it that way, so it's kind of become accepted. So I just say it that way. There's a word that I noticed my father, and he acknowledges, I think it's error instead of era, you know, like the end of an era. A lot of people do that, at least in the Northeast, where I grew up.
Add the ER at the end?
Yeah, they'll just call it error. It's the end of an error. Right? When you really mean era. That's another one. Like, you know you're saying it wrong, but it's like, yeah, that's how I've always said it, right? You just accept it. And people know what you're saying, and at least where I grew up in Connecticut, like, everyone else is saying it wrong anyways, and they know they're saying it wrong. There are just certain words that, for whatever reason, you always said them, maybe incorrectly, and so you accept it. And it's just, that's how you always say it. Along those same lines, I've referenced this before, but the pet peeve is that people always say, I could care less. Like, that's a phrase that, same idea. You're saying it wrong, but most people say it like that anyways, and everybody accepts it, and they know what you mean. But obviously, what you really mean is, I couldn't care less. You don't have any other cares to give. You couldn't care. People always say, I could care less. Well, that means you do care about it, because you could care less than how you currently care. But anyways, that's besides the point. Well, I hope we get a big matchup in the playoffs with the Bengals and the Titans, so I can say them oddly all week long getting ready for that game. Appreciate the time from Charge, as always. One of the best in the biz when it comes to fantasy football. We'll wrap up hour two when we come back. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
Wrapping up hour two here on the Morrow Midday Show. Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. Great song from Rick James. We could try to bring this back to sports. I guess Rick James could kind of be like the Urban Meyer. A lot of success, right? Everything Rick James put out was fantastic, but just what a lunatic. Always getting himself in trouble with the most ridiculous stories, but the dude could create music. Urban Meyer, at least in college, could win games. But along the way, you're thinking, like, what is up with this guy? What is he doing? In the NFL, didn't work out so much. But Rick James, that's another hit. And then, of course, he worked with the band, the Mary Jane Girls, in the 80s as well. And they had their own hit. We have fallen out of the routine. I was supposed to, leading up to the Christmas holiday, be giving you little bits of trivia or historic information about how some of the traditions have come to be. By the way, if you ever miss anything from the show, catch it on demand. Search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcast. Appreciate the time from Paul Charchi in the last segment, breaking down this weekend in the NFL and his fantasy football advice for you heading into your playoff. But with that said, let's shift gears and get back to some of our Christmas traditions and origin stories as we get ready for the Christmas holiday now less than 10 days away. It's hard to believe. I'll give you a couple because we haven't done any all week long. Gingerbread houses. I've never been into gingerbread. I think gingerbread houses, I just don't get it. Overrated. I don't want to do the work. And then once you do the work, you put them together. Like, you know, you actually want to eat them. And then they're sitting outside and, you know, on the table or whatever. They get hard and stale and everything. It's a waste of time. I'd rather just eat the candy. Plus, the candy's not that great. Like, you get, like, the gumdrops and stuff. Mm. No good. And the actual gingerbread that's used as the walls. Trent, are you into making gingerbread houses at all?
It's always a good activity, you know, family bonding. But I'm not a fan of the candies, like you said, or the house itself. So I agree with you there.
Yeah. I'm also not big into carving pumpkins either. That's another waste of time.
I agree.
But these traditions, they are traditions for a reason. They don't go away. Anyways, gingerbread houses dates back to Queen Elizabeth, the first Queen Elizabeth. Queen Elizabeth I gets credit for decorating the first gingerbread house, doing so with, I guess originally it started with gingerbread cookies and decorating the cookies. So a little bit different. Not necessarily a gingerbread house. People still do that today. You get cookies that are, you know, maybe like a snowman or whatever. All right, you get the themed Christmas-themed cookies. It started with Queen Elizabeth the First years ago. But it also dates back to Germany, the actual gingerbread houses. And I got to be honest, I don't think I ever read the book, but the Brothers Grimm from Germany, when they wrote Hansel and Gretel, it was part of the book, I guess, was decorating a gingerbread house. And that's actually the belief that that's when it started, that it became a tradition once it was used in that book. And from moving from that point moving forward, then it became this annual tradition that maybe you and your family still do today after being used in that fairy tale. And that came out in 1812. So I guess a relatively new tradition of the gingerbread house. In fact, looking it up now, on the cover of the book looks to be like a gingerbread house. I haven't read the story, so I can't tell you how big of a deal it was. But reading the synopsis right now, apparently it's about the sisters that live in a house made of gingerbread. So there you go. Perfect. Another tradition that maybe you use is the advent calendars. We do this in my family. You get the calendars for the holiday, for the new year. That first started also in Germany. Germany is where all of these traditions originated. 1903 was the first time, and it was a way to offer a way for children to count down the Christmas. The advent calendar is actually, yeah, like the 24 days of Christmas. You start it in December, you have it on your wall, and you check off the days leading up to Christmas. That's the real advent calendar. My family, what we do is on Christmas, you actually gift calendars for the new year that are calendars made for your family, pictures of family members. But the advent calendar that leads up to Christmas began in 1903 in Germany as a way for people to count down the days to get ready for Christmas. And they became 1920 was when they started to be created en masse to go out to different houses. And originally, the calendars included daily gifts from bottles of wine to nail polish to chocolate to action figures. Way back in the 1920s in the Great Depression. That sounds pretty good. I'll use an advent calendar if I'm getting a bottle of wine or some chocolates or an action figure out of it every day leading up to Christmas. You're getting a gift every day leading up to Christmas. That's pretty good. I gotta get back on this tradition, the advent calendar. There you go, making you the smartest person this holiday season. We'll talk with Lee Sterling when we come back. He'll give us his favorite bets of the bowl season. It's the More Midday Show on ESPN Radio.